Well, today on this All Saints Day, we have Jesus talking about how our lives are to be like a seed, and his life is to be like a seed that falls into the ground and dies and bears much fruit. Now, I know Jesus didn't just see his life as completely lost, that he had times of celebration, say the wedding at Cana, but in general, this is really a core principle, a core piece of wisdom, if you will, of how he understood our human life, that we're going to lose it. And his idea is not to fight that by pursuing and gaining life and getting all we can here, that sort of activity, for he says that is going to work out well for you. Rather, he instructs us to say, well, you have to accept the fact that we're going to lose life, that it's going away, and use that as best you can for the sake of others. And in that, you'll find life, and he even goes further here and says, you'll bear fruit. In losing your life, becoming like that seed, you're going to bear fruit. So on that point, I think there's some real hopefulness to what Jesus says for us who are mortals here, who have a life that's slipping away from ourselves. Well, our Old Testament has, again, we're kind of working through the Old Testament. We have Elijah showing up, who really, I think, is an example of this. He kind of was going on, if you remember, about saying, I've been so zealous for you, God, that these people are pursuing me. They're trying to kill me, God. And in the end, he has to anoint somebody in his place to take over for him. So his time was limited, and he knew he was coming to the end of that. And Elijah falls in the Old Testament time where the kings, kind of in the period of the kings, it's from 1 Kings, so it shouldn't surprise us. The first two kings were great kings, first three maybe, but two in particular, David and Solomon. David made the kingdom. He developed it. He brought it together, gave it power. Solomon lived in the great glory of the kingdom. But after that, things started crumbling, falling apart. In fact, that big kingdom divides into two kingdoms, and Elijah's in that northern kingdom, and it just went from bad to worse. There were all kinds of other cultures and religions around, and it really didn't follow the path of God very close. And that's where Elijah came in to stand against the fertility gods, was what the big thing was in the day, these fertility gods. You say, well, what? Fertility gods, what's that about? Well, it's about rain. It's pretty simple. These were mostly subsistence people. They had to grow crops. They had to have their few animals find some grazing, or they'll go hungry. They didn't have the grocery store down the street. If it's a drought here, we get food from somewhere else. If they don't have the yearly rains, they go hungry or even can die. So you can imagine these people, and they're in this time frame, and they're living off the land, and the rains are supposed to be coming, and they're not coming. And they pray to the Lord, Lord, send us rain, and nothing happens. And they go back to the Lord. Lord, you know, it's getting really dry. We need the rains now, or it's going to be too late for our crops. The grazing's not going to be there. It's going to get really hot. And there's nothing to be for our animals. Lord, send rain. Nothing happens. And they see these people traipsing up to the high places. That's where they put these fertility altars, on the high places. And they're going up there, and they're offering sacrifices, and they're doing the things for the worship of Baal, is the name of the main god of this stuff, to cause it to rain. And these are specialists, you see. They specialize in sending rain. That's what they do. So what do you do? Well, Lord, you're not bringing any rain, so maybe I'll go up the high places with these and see if at least Baal can get me some rain. Well, Elijah, of course, knew the first command, which is, I am the Lord your God. You shall have no other gods before me. Quite aware of that command. And he lived it. And in fact, it got so conflicted between the prophets of Baal and the prophets of the Lord, they started killing each other. And the fact that Elijah had killed some of the prophets of Baal is why he's in his situation today. Because the king and the queen of Israel were invested in those prophets, and they wanted revenge on Elijah. And so he was running south. He was heading straight south. He went through Israel, he was in the northern Israel. So he had to go all the way through Israel, all the way through the tribe of Judah, all the way down into the Sinai, 40 days and 40 nights, it said, through the Sinai, to Mount Horeb, which is also known as Mount Sinai. So that's where he's heading, and angels are supporting him. I hope that all sounds a little familiar. There's another 40 out there that happened a little earlier in our story. Of course, that was the 40 years, the wilderness of the people of Israel. They were 40 years out wandering in the same area that Elijah's now 40 days. And they were sustained by manna from God. Here, Elijah is sustained by angels. And he's going up to Mount Sinai to hear from God. And of course, we know Moses went up to Mount Sinai to hear from God. In fact, he goes into a cave, it says. Remember, Moses went into a cleft in the rock. Kind of close, isn't it? And Moses waited for the Lord to pass by. And what do we have? We have Elijah waiting for the Lord to pass by. That's where we get that thing about the great wind breaking rocks and the earthquake and the fire coming by and Elijah realizing, you know, the Lord is not in these things. And then there's that real interesting thing comes up. And if you study it actually in the Hebrew, the three words that are used here, and I use a little Hebrew, so hang on, are dama, doc, kol. Dama, doc, kol. And the last two are pretty easy. A doc means thin, and kol means voice or sound. The catcher is in that word dama, because it can mean quiet or silence. Now, there's a big difference between quiet and silence. If you hear something that's quiet, you hear something. If you hear silence, you hear nothing. And so the translators have gone all over the place on this one. In the common and famous one of the translations of this is a still, small voice. Have you heard that? Remember that one? That Elijah went up on the mountain, he heard the still, small voice. And many a sermon, probably some I preach, have been on that very topic. That you go out and you see the Waldo Canyon fire and you say, the Lord is not in the fire. You see the hurricanes and the great winds blowing houses down and you say, the Lord is not in the hurricane. And you see all this other grand stuff and you say, the Lord is not that. You want to know where the Lord is? You listen for that still, small voice. That's good advice. I think it works that way. God is often subtle, boiling up from within, but that's the way God speaks. Is that what's being said here? Well, we really don't know. We really don't know. Our translation today, of course, goes a very different direction. It says, Elijah heard sheer silence. That puts you in a different place, doesn't it? Well, if he heard nothing, what does that mean? Some people have speculated it means that he was done. Because if you're a prophet, your whole life is around hearing the word of the Lord. Now you've gone to the high place to listen to God, and God says nothing. That's not a good thing. And of course, he goes out and hears he's supposed to put another prophet in his place. So some think, well, that's his, you know, pink slip, as you say. You're fired. But then, you know, for me, with a foot in the contemplative tradition, I hear in sheer silence that they say in that side of things that God is most present, most powerfully present, precisely in the silence. So what happens there in this cave in the rock on Mount Sinai? We don't know. It's a mystery. What does it mean? Well, I'm not quite sure of that either. We're kind of left. Did he hear little or did he hear nothing? And if he heard those things, what do they mean? Well, I'm not quite sure. You know, it's interesting that our experience as people often go there, don't they? When you're in a really a bad spot, if you're looking for God to speak to your life, and maybe you have some place you go, maybe it's a church, maybe it's a place out in nature, I don't know where you go, maybe it's a spot in your house. You're going and you want to hear from God. You've taken the journey and here you are, God, it's time now to talk to me. I got this issue, someone's sick, someone financial, whatever it is, you know, God, what do you hear? I don't know about you, but sometimes I hear little or nothing. And I'm not sure which. If it was little or nothing, did God really kind of say something here? Or am I just missing on this? I'm missing something here. It isn't always very clear, is it? There's this sense of mystery, and it's not always clear. Sometimes it is clear. But sometimes we're kind of left hanging. That's what it means to be people of God who walk by faith. And sometimes we don't just have it all figured out. It's not always clear. And how that applies isn't for sure. What we know Elijah does is he wraps his face, so there's some sense of the presence of God, because he's covering his face. Because God's present somehow, even in the sheer silence, something. And he walks out of the cave, and then he gets the clear word. You need to anoint these two new guys as kings of these kingdoms, and you need to anoint a new prophet in your place. So God uses Elijah. He keeps using Elijah. In fact, he's one of the great prophets, and his most famous scene probably when he gets taken in the chariots of fire right up into heaven. So this is a great man, this Elijah, who stood for the Lord, who felt the fear and the pangs of standing for God in the midst of things that were tough, who somehow knew that there needed to be a strong presence against this huge tide. So today I want to start by, on All Saints Day, lighting a candle for our Elijah. Pretty soon we're going to invite you up to light a bunch of candles up here if you want. It's All Saints Day. And we remember those who've gone before us whose lives were seeds, who fell into the ground and died. And on that side, I think it's kind of sad, isn't it? I feel it. Every year, I feel it. A lot of good people die. We love. And in the midst of that, we don't grieve as people without hope, I don't think. I think a lot of these people died and they bore some fruit in you and me, too. They were examples of faith, maybe. Maybe they were just a very loving person. Maybe we saw them at a time where they were down and out and they had a resilience to come back that just reminds us of a goodness. Maybe they had courage to make some tough decisions. I don't know. Maybe we just missed their smile, their face. They were family. They were parents. They were brothers or sisters. They were spouses. They were children even. They're all kinds. Mentors, teachers, friends. But some of them lives in us, isn't there? A little spark of a light of their, because they died and they bore this fruit in us to carry on here. They did. Oh, I don't want to say they were perfect people either. We're good Lutheran All Saints people. These people made some mistakes, didn't they? They had some flaws and some things that drove us nuts. But even there, we want to say, we learned something. We learned something even from their downside. And their saints burning bright, I think, not just in our souls, but before the Lord. Because this is just a little token, isn't it? Just a little token. There's this life that comes because this one Lord fell into the ground and died to bear fruit for you and me. A fruit that means our lives can burn before God forever. A little sign. That it's not the end, that your and I's life, as small as it is here, burns bright with God for eternity. That we have this before the Lord. So we're going to sing a hymn in praise of God. And we'll invite you to light a candle before the Lord.